Well, it's great to see you all here tonight. Our first plenary night of the 1974 fall season. This is our 1974 fiscal year, so and ministry year. So, as far as we're concerned, we're already in 1974 on the budget and in the ministry reports. The purpose of Glen Eyrie Nights, as I see it, is first of all to spend some time in the Word together. And later on in our program, Jack Mayhall is going to share from the Word with us. And then just to have a time of fellowship, we've got refreshments that some of the wives and girls have put together after the meeting. And then just to get to know one another a little better. And to foster that tonight, what we plan for the program is some testimonies by some of the new men that are here, so that you can get to know us a little better and that we can share some of our background with you. And what I've asked the guys to do is not only just share how they came to know Christ, but also what their experiences have been here on Glen Eyrie, because all the men that will be sharing tonight have been here as trainees and have worked in various departments of the Glen, and you might be surprised to find out where some of these men have worked in past years. So that should be interesting. Then the fourth thing is to share information. And you know, communications is always a problem. And I asked Linda Myers, my secretary, to put together a list of personnel moves and new people coming and people leaving. And it fills a whole sheet. And the danger is that there's always a danger of forgetting. So I'll read off the ones that we thought of, and then I'll have anyone announce their own that we've forgotten. I'm sure there'll be some. Now, one thing we haven't put down here, we haven't listed all the new people that are coming this fall. So when I get done reading these, then I'm going to ask everyone else who's new here this fall to stand up, and we'll have you introduce yourself and tell what you're doing. But first, I'd like to mention some of the organizational appointments and moves that have been made. I think most of us are aware that Jim Peterson has been appointed the new divisional director for South America. Jim right now is on a trip down in Mexico, but Jim and Marge are living here in the Springs now and will be with us, and we'll get Jim sharing one of our next Glen Eyrie nights or so. And then Jack and Carol Mayhall. Jack is now the administrative vice president. That means he's responsible for all the administration here at headquarters, and is Lauren's principal assistant. And Jack will be sharing with us later in the program. And he brought with him Doris Jean Markham. Is Doris Jean here tonight? There you are, Doris Jean. Why don't you stand up so I can meet you, Doris Jean. Jack's been the Northern Division divisional director, but if you talk with Doris Jean on the telephone, you'll think he raided the Southern Division to get his secretary. Now, is Chuck Broughton here?
Yeah.
Chuck, would you stand up? Chuck is Jack's administrative assistant. Chuck's also from the Northern Division. Just arrived a day or two ago, right, Chuck? Okay, good to have you here. Then Gordon Adams has a new job, assisting Rod in the finance department. We won't ask the old faces to stand up, because I think we all know Gordon. Then Linda Snow. Let's see, Linda, where are you? Linda, are you here? Would you stand up? Linda has moved from being Scotty's secretary to being Rod and Gordon's secretary over in the office. Then George Marhead, are you here? George? Not here tonight. Well, he's Lauren's personal assistant. Then I've replaced Gordon as the Director of Administrative Services. And my wife, Doris, would you stand to have the people meet you? Okay. Carol, would you stand? Is there anyone you'd like to have stand? Right, I'm sorry. We should have had Carol stand. Then some new appointments working for me are Gail Kaiser. Gail, would you stand back here in the flashy sport coat? Gail's an accountant from California. When I came, I found him packing materials back in the shipping department. So I grabbed onto him and made him my assistant to help me with the administrative work. So he is the administrative assistant to the director of administrative affairs. Dick Bennett, are you here? Dick Bennett. Dick is... Stay up there, love. Come on, Dick. And your wife? I'm sorry, I don't know your wife's name, Dick. Rhoda. Dick and Rhoda. Dick is now responsible for answering the correspondence that comes into the headquarters that's addressed to the navigators. You know, I have this problem and I have that problem. What do the navigators believe about this? Well, that's Dick's responsibility now to answer those letters. And he has a heavy correspondence load. Now, Lee Roscoe, who's been handling that, is now the full-time purchasing agent. And then Pat DiNatale, is that how you say it? DiNatale? Pat's my new secretary. Stand up, Pat. I got to reading this after I got home, and I said, boy, I don't even know how to pronounce her last name. And, of course, Pat is replacing Linda Myers, who's been Gordon's secretary for a couple of years. And Linda will be leaving September this Friday and going back to the Promised Land in California, where she'll be joining in with the ministry up in San Luis Obispo. And I know that Linda's been a real blessing here in the office, and they'll be glad to get her back in California, too. Tim Galvin. Tim, would you stand up? Where are you? Tim here? Not here. Okay, well, he's the new Verityper. That's the typesetting machine. And Jan Roberts. Jan, are you here? Would you stand up, Jan? Jan is Walt Hendrickson's new secretary. Then Brian Robertson is now assisting Walt. And Jim and Jerry White. Would you please stand? Is Jerry? There's Jerry. Jim and Jerry.
Everything's okay, Bob.
Is that right? Huh? Well, I thought maybe you were counseling Ed and Ruth there. Jim is George Sanchez's new assistant in the staff counseling department. And, of course, Jim and Jerry have been heading up our work in Africa for several years, and Jim will be sharing with us tonight, giving his testimony. And sometime in one of the next few Glenary nights, we'd like to have some missionary reports from Jim and some of the others that are here back from the mission field. And then also, Dolores Preble has shifted over to the counseling department as secretary to George and Jim, and also girls counselor. Then on the operations crew, we have Kay Franklin as the new girls worker. Or is Kay here tonight? We have you here, Kay. And Mel and Nancy Leader, would you folks stand? New assistant. Mel is the assistant to the Glenary director, and Mel will also be sharing with us tonight. And then John Skeith, if that's the right pronunciation. Are you here, John? Is that the way you say it?
Right.
John Skeith, assisting Len Freusland as assistant conference coordinator here on the Glen. Assistant coordinator to the conference coordinator. And Carolyn Ortez, where are you, Carolyn? She's good. Good to have you. Carolyn's one of our California girls, and she's Russ Reed and Mel Leader's new secretary. She's been at the Glen for about a year, has a new job. Then... also leaving, besides Linda, is Woody Plank from the operations crew. And Woody will be going to join the ministry in Sterling, Colorado this Friday. And Prudy Irvin. It's Prudy here. You want to stand up, Prudy? She'll be leaving in the next couple of weeks to get a job in town and tie in with First Methodist Church. And then Mike Kaminsky. Mike, are you here? Oh, he's recording. Okay, well, Mike is leaving next week for Phoenix to go to electronics school. And then Steve Plitt. Are you here, Steve? Steve's going back to Ohio to tie in with Bob Phobes. Bob Phobes lived in our home in Boston for a couple years. You'll have a great time back there, Steve. Larry Walton. You hear Larry. Larry's going back to Sterling, Colorado, go to school and join the ministry there in Sterling. Vern and Elsie Bates are missionaries on furlough this year in the Springs from Indonesia. And is Lou Stevens in the area? I understand. She's gone already. Okay, Lou Stevens was here a few days ago, I guess, from Japan. Then we have a Mrs. Lombeck. Mrs. Lombeck, would you stand up, please? Mrs. Lombeck is the mother of Ralph Lombeck, who's one of our apartment leaders, team leaders, back in the D.C. ministry. She dropped in for a visit. We're glad to have you with us tonight, Mrs. Lombeck. A couple items for prayer, and I'm sure that Jim and Marina Downing would really appreciate your prayers as they head over to Europe for about a 15-day trip on the 20th of this month. Jim will be speaking at conferences and visiting. They'll be visiting the ministry throughout Northern Europe, I believe. And then also, 2 days later, Jerry and Eleanor Bridges will be heading for Europe, and they'll be leaving the 22nd of September. Jerry will be gone for about a month, and I understand that Eleanor will not be gone quite that long. So we'll be upholding them in prayer as they go. And we rejoice that enough finances came in for Eleanor to join Jerry. And, praise the Lord for that on this trip. On November 15th, make a note of this, on November 15th, there'll be a Glen Eyrie night to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Glen Eyrie. 20th anniversary of the Navigators operating here at Glen Eyrie. So that's a real special night that you want to put down on your calendar. And Jack, would you like to say a word now about the Navigator film, which you'll be showing, premiere showing here September 22nd, 27th? Could you give a word about that now?
About 2 years ago, the idea was conceived primarily in Chuck Unger's mind and mine put together. It took two minds to conceive it, I guess, of formulating, putting together a Navigator film. And we had done a little experiment on it by putting together this 8mm Super 8 sound film, which some of you I think have seen. It centered primarily on the summer training programs, and it was a step in the right direction, but a very small step. And but we were so pleased with it and got such a good response from it that we decided that we would take the deep plunge and go 16mm color sound. And so Chuck began to work on some ideas, and I formulated a rough idea of the content or the story theme of it, and then Chuck put it together. And then we ran into a fellow in town by the name of Paul Franklin, who had just gotten out of the Air Force, was a Christian, and who had gone into his own movie-making business. And so Paul has done most of the filming. We'll do all of the editing, the titling, and everything else that will give it a real, and I put this in quotes, Hollywood effect. It'll have dissolves and various other aspects to it that can only be done in a professional lab. I have seen most of the footage on it. I haven't seen the final cutting yet. The final editing is yet to be done, probably this week or next. But I think you will be very pleased with what has come out of it. And it's basically the story of how the Navigators operate on a college or university campus today, anywhere in the world, actually, although it's all filmed here in the U.S. on several different college campuses. And it shows the story of a young man or a young girl from the time they accept Jesus Christ as their Savior until they end up as a missionary on the Nav staff overseas someplace. And it goes through their whole process of growth, development, follow-up, training, being a team leader, being a contact point, and then eventually ending up overseas. And we do all that in about 23 minutes. We have been looking for ways to speed up our training process for years, and we have finally finally latched onto this new thing called the motion picture industry. So I would like to invite all of you, all of your friends, anybody who you feel would be interested in coming on the 27th, we'll have it right here. And I trust that we'll really pack this place out. We'll have the chairs set up so that the screen will be facing that wall so we can use the balcony. And I'd like to see about 400 or 500 people here. So start inviting people. That's 2 weeks from this Thursday.
Oh, let me say one more. Just thought of something.
We really have been praying about this movie, that the Lord would really use it in the lives of people. And when we were doing some filming at the University of Illinois, the assistant to Paul Franklin, a guy by the name of Mike, was involved in the filming process. And that evening, he and Chuck Unger were having dinner together over at the Student Union. And Mike, just out of the clear blue sky, said, Chuck, what's this really all about, this movie that we're making? What are we really trying to do? Now, Mike was not a Christian. And so Chuck said, do you really want to know? And so she explained the whole thing to him, gave him the gospel, and shortly after Mike got back to the Springs, back home again, he trusted Christ as his Savior. Since then, his wife has also come to know the Lord, and Mike will be giving his testimony the night we show the film. So that might be an incentive for you to come.
Terrific. I have a note here concerning Yvonne Potter's condition. I think you know that Yvonne suffered some kind of a setback in the midst of a back operation and a couple weeks ago. And this note says, this is from Bob Potter, her husband. Bob said, we almost lost her. We sensed the prayers of the Nav gang and feel God answered. She is recovering well. They have just removed the stitches. And the prayer requests are that there will be no more blood clotting, because they think it probably was a blood clot that she had that went through her heart while they were doing the surgery, and that their emotions will stabilize. And then George has a report on Greg. So George, if you could give us a word on Greg now. You might tell a little bit about Greg. There may be some here that aren't familiar with his situation.
Right. And just one word on Yvonne Potter. I called the other day and talked with Bob. He was in the hospital room. And so I said, do you think Yvonne would be willing to talk? And so he put her on the phone, and I chatted with her. And it was the second time she had talked with anyone. Just a couple of days before that, Lila, I'm sorry, I can't remember. I believe it was Lila that called and talked with her for an hour. And it was a real encouragement to her. The additional thing we can pray for Yvonne is that they were not able to terminate the operation. There were two phases to the operation. One was to remove a damaged disc in order to relieve pressure on some nerves that were causing a tremendous amount of pain, as some of you know from experience when you have a slipped disc. And the other was to bring about a fusion of some vertebrae that are damaged. They were not able to terminate. As a result, the back problem has not been totally solved. And whether they'll be able to, or when they'll be able to do that, is a question that remains unresolved at this time. So you might add that to your prayers in remembering Yvonne. Greg McCarty, as probably most of you know, was injured this summer in a fall in a rock climbing incident. As I understand it, they were looking for new climbing areas, and through a series of circumstances, he fell, was it 80 feet? Is that correct? About 80 feet, and received multiple injuries, serious injuries. He has been in intensive care up until about a week and a half ago, when they put him in what they call intermediate care, which is the next step. When I went to see him today, I went to his room, and he wasn't there. And they've put him in a regular ward, a regular floor now, with a roommate, which indicates that he's making progress. And at the same time, I think that I have something that I'd like to share with you in a moment that I want you to consider very seriously. But let me tell you just a little bit about what's happening to Greg. He received several cuts on his head, which are healing very well. In fact, they've been stitched up and they're healed well. They've operated on his hip about 2 weeks ago, and that's coming along very well. They put a pin in the hip. His left arm is in a cast. And, of course, he has damaged his face considerably. I was talking with one of the nurses today, and one of the problems is that they were not able to get to the repair work on his jaw early enough because of the complications that set in immediately following the injury, and as a result, the jaw has set, and they're not going to be able to do a great deal more. Now, it isn't that bad, but he feels it's quite obvious. He's a little bit concerned about his appearance. He knocked out a number of teeth, and of course those are permanent losses now, and they'll have to do a good deal of orthodontistry and some kind of dental repair work eventually. The thing about Greg right now is that even though he's healing well physically, you can imagine that emotionally he's having quite a bit of shock in coming back to realize what he's facing. And not only that, but the long, long hours of just lying there are quite tedious and somewhat discouraging to him. His father has returned to their home, and so there is no family around now that stops in periodically. Some of the folks have been dropping in to see him, and I know he appreciates that very, very much. His attention span is short. That is to say, not his mental capacity, but just his ability to maintain an intensive communication is just naturally short. And so a 15-minute visit is maximum. Now, what I would like to suggest, I talked with the folks there at the hospital today when I went to see him, and they said that where he is now, he can receive visitors with no problem during the normal visiting hours. Through the day, Greg is quite busy in the various things that they're doing. They're doing a great deal of physical therapy. He's sitting up in a chair now, and it's quite painful for him. He's developed the pretty normal bed sores, and they're treating those. And so there is progress being made. But through the day, there are a number of things that keep him fairly busy. So during the day, it's not as essential as in the evening hours. And I think here's a place where you could invest 1 hour that would make quite a difference in a young man's life. And that's all it would take you. I think from wherever you live, you could get to the hospital in some 20 minutes and spend 15 minutes visiting him, and return to your home and be back where you want to be within an hour. Now, in order to avoid a great deal of complication regarding how we can do this without everybody arriving at the same time, I would like to ask Mel if we could ask Carolyn to sort of coordinate this. La Señorita Ortiz. By the way, that's Ortiz, not... Carolyn Ortiz. I thought, who's Carolyn? Oh, he means... This is Carolina Ortiz. That's right. By the way, your secretary. That's Patricia De Natale. And she's the biggest spaghetti eater. We Latins have got to stick together. I mean, you know, we're going to take this place over by force after a while, like they did in Chile. By the way, are you up to date on that? Man, read the papers. That's exciting, because that is important to us in our planning for the ministry down there. I would like to suggest then, Carolyn, that you become the coordinator, and whoever desires to go down and visit Greg, get in touch with Carolyn. And I'd like to recommend that you plan 3 a night and space them so that, you know, there's about a 15-minute break between their arrivals there. I think the visiting hours go on until what time? Can someone tell me at Penrose? 7 to 9? All right? Or 8:30? All right, let's say it's 8:30, 7 to 8:30. So you've got an hour and a half block in there to work in three visits from some of the gang. Would you do that for us, Carolyn? And you all pray about it, and if it's something you feel you'd like to invest your time in, there are enough of us that if we do it and work it out, we could probably keep somebody seeing him pretty much for the next several weeks. And this would be a big encouragement to him. Thank you very much.
Thank you, George. I'm kind of nervous tonight, and I had asked Jim Downing to pray, not Ed Rice, but Ed did an excellent job. I also forgot to introduce my mother. Would you stand up, Mom? It's my mother. She lives here in Colorado Springs. Now we're going to have first Mel Leader come up and share a word of testimony with us, and then Jim White. So first Mel, and then Jim.
I just forgot everything. Well, it's a privilege to share with you this evening. My parents were both Christians, still are. They're still living. Let me begin from the beginning. You know, when you get in front of this group, you just kind of come apart at the seams. You don't know what to expect. Would you like to come up? Well, Mom and Dad were faithful in taking me to church and Sunday school. As far back as I can recall, I have uncles who are ministers, evangelists, and pastors. But I had a Swedish grandmother who, after she became a widow, she lived with us for a number of years. She could not speak English. She had this huge Swedish Bible, and I can recall vividly seeing her in the living room sitting in an overstuffed chair. She'd had her cataracts removed, and I don't recall how old she was, but she was quite aged. She'd had her cataracts removed, and she would sit in that chair with then two pair of glasses on. She'd take this finger and keep this eye closed, and she would ball her fist up and make just a tiny, tiny hole, and she'd sit there for hour after hour scanning that old Swedish Bible. And then I know that she would spend many hours praying. And I know that she was praying for me, because I used to give her a bad time. Well, with all this background, I didn't become a Christian until I was 17 years old. I knew the gospel story. I had even gone forward in evangelistic meetings that my uncle was conducting. I'd go through the emotions of making a decision. I could even shed tears, but nothing transpired in my heart because I did not will it to take place. And then when I was 17, a buddy of mine, we were in evangelistic service that our church was participating in. We were sitting on the second balcony in this Masonic temple as far back as we could get with a couple of dates we had. And the evangelist gave the invitation. He wasn't satisfied with the response, so he said, "I'd like all the Christians to stand up." Well, these two girls, they stood up, and Don and I sat there. And we were the two kind of, quote, fair-haired boys of the church, you know. And so we glanced around this balcony, and here it seemed like that almost the entire congregation from our church were standing in that balcony, and they were all kind of looking at us. Well, out of pressure, and we knew that one day we would really have to make a personal commitment to Christ. And Don and I got out of our seats and went forward. Our pastor met us, and that night, Don and I both invited Christ into our heart. And I knew that something had really taken place, had transpired in my life, because I had a desire to tell others about Christ, which I had never had before, even though in young people's we'd go out passing out tracts and so-called witnessing, and let's hurry up and get this done, get to the refreshments and the fun kind of attitude. And then, as I tried to share the gospel with people, I could tell them what had happened to me, and that's as far as I could go. I didn't know how to go to the Word. And I remember our pastor one day said, "Mel," I said, "if you ever have any questions, come around and I'll be glad to discuss them with you and talk to you." And I didn't know what kind of questions to ask him. And so then I kind of slipped back into the old routine. And then later on, I joined the Navy. And this was the first time really out from under the umbrella of the church and the fellowship and the warmth and the protection of the Christian community. And when I first went aboard ship, a small ship in San Diego, an LSM, we had a crew of 50 and about 3 and 4 officers, and we lived pretty close together. And I was the only Christian I soon discovered on that ship. And I did have my Bible out, and I was trying to read it. Didn't really know how to read it, but I was trying. And it wasn't, a few months went by, and I noticed that more and more my Bible would get further and further in the back of my locker, and I would look at it less and less, because I really didn't know how to cope with this new life and how to live a victorious life. And one day I was irritated about something, and I used the Lord's name in vain, and almost within 2 hours, every guy on that ship came to me and said, "Leader, did you really say such and such?" And I didn't realize how close they were really observing me. Well, that was the first step down, and it was easier to keep going down, which I did. My uncle, who was an evangelist, wrote to me one time when I was out there, and he said, "Mel, if you ever run across the Navigators, you know, look them up. Get acquainted with them." And one day, I went to a little Baptist church, hadn't been to church for a long time, decided I better go and kind of, you know, do something to my conscience. And that day, there was a guest speaker. It happened to be Glenn Solem, who was the representative for the Navigators in Southern California. And he was speaking about the Word and how important it was to your life and what it could do for you and how it could give you victory and all this. And I said, "Wow, that's what I need." So I nailed him after the service, and we talked for 2 hours. He missed his lunch, and I missed mine. I remember that. And he ended up, he gave me this little thing with 4 cards in it, and he said, "You start memorizing this," gave me his address, and said, "Come on out to our Bible study. And come out and have a hot hamburger with us." And so I did that after I finally found the place a few weeks later. And I remember sitting around the Bible study, a small group of sailors in a circle. You know, and they said, "Okay, we're going to study Colossians tonight." Colossians, where is that? You know, I was so ignorant. With all this church background, I didn't even know the books of the New Testament. And so I was embarrassed in this situation, and I just went back a couple times. But I remember Glenn sitting down with me and trying to help me just with assurance of salvation. Well, the Lord in His mercy transferred me from San Diego, California, halfway around the world to Naples, Italy. And when I arrived there, I decided that, well, that I would kind of straighten out my life, but I didn't know really what to do, and this foreign port, and there was all sorts of things a guy could do over there. And I heard about a servicemen center downtown. And I had been in servicemen centers before, and I really didn't care for them because they, you know, high pressure you with the gospel. You know, I just wanted to go in and drink their coffee and eat their donuts and read their magazines. But some guy would nail you at the table, you know, and he'd whip out his New Testament, give you the gospel, and he'd whip out a decision card and give you a ballpoint and say, "Press hard here," you know. That's the ballpoint decision. And so I went down to the servicemen center because one of the guys that I went over to Naples with had found it, and he came back to one evening after being on liberty, and he found the center, and he said, "Hey, leader," he said, "we found the place you ought to go." He said, we went in, and he said, "There's no girls, and there's no dancing, and there's no booze. All they do is drink coffee and play ping pong." He said, "You ought to go down there." He'd seen me reading my Bible. And I said, "Well, okay." So he showed me where it was, and I went down on a Saturday. And I walked in the door, second floor, I can remember it very vividly, through a little foyer. And there, leaning against the filing cabinet, was a good-looking guy, nicely dressed, sharp, and immediately made an impression on me. And he walked over and he says, "My name's Dan Pyatt. What's yours?" Some of you know Dan Pyatt. Well, I was really on the defense. I was waiting for the, you know, the ballpoint approach. And so we had the coffee and the donut, and nothing happened, and I started to relax a little bit, and he showed me around this 22-room facility they had, and I started warming up, and so for some reason we were the only two in the center that whole Saturday afternoon. And I thought, well, probably a good idea to talk about something religious. So I started telling a little bit about my church background, and I still had this beginning with Christ that Glenn Solem had given me I don't know how many months before. And I said, "Hey, Dan, you know, I've got something there that helps a guy in his Christian life." And he says, "Oh," he said, "What is it?" I said, "Well, it's this little thing here. It's got these 4 verse cards in. You memorize these verses and it really helps you in your Christian life." And he said, "Well," I said, "let me see that." And it was kind of worn out, dog-eared and all. It just had been handled a lot. And he said, now, what do you do with these verses? And I said, well, you memorize them. He said, well, let's hear you quote this first one. So I said, well, let's see now. What was that reference on that one? And he said, well, it's 1 John 5:11-12. I said, well, what was the first word? Well, I didn't know the verses. I stumbled through a couple of them. And he said, let me share something with you. So he just opened the Word, and he gave me his own testimony on how important the Word was to him. And he said, wouldn't you really like to get a fresh start in getting into the Scriptures, getting it into your life? And I said, I really would, Dan. He said, okay, come on over here. And so we walked into the little office, and he opened this filing drawer cabinet, and the thing was just packed with these bee rations. See? And he said, here, throw that one away and get a fresh start. Well, I was stationed there a year and a half in Pete, Georgia. Many of you know he was Dan's right-hand man, his Timothy, over there with him. And Pete had his Bible study on Friday nights and going through the basics, quiet time and all these things. Oh, it just, you know, really delicious. You know, I just ate it up because that's what I needed. I knew I needed it and I wanted it. And that year and a half, my life was revolutionized because I learned how to get into the Word and apply it to my life. And then in the meantime, Dan had moved to Holland, and there were other people interested in servicemen centers. And Dawson said, well, we can't supply personnel. You raise up your own over in Europe. And Dan and I were communicating about what the Lord's plan was for my life. And so he invited me to take my discharge in Europe and work in the servicemen centers. And through a lot of wonderful circumstances, the Lord worked it out, and I did. So I took my discharge in January 1954. Excuse me, 1950. Wow, I'm older than I thought I was. Way back there somewhere. I took my discharge and remained in Europe 4.5 more years, working in the servicemen centers with Stan Bostrom, Tommy Adkins, and all the guys like this. I had a great time. And then I came back to the United States in 1959. Came to the Glen. I had been here before, just on a very brief visit. And Jim Downing was kind of running everything then. And I remember after I got settled in, I went up to his office and for a job assignment. And here I had been a serviceman center director now in Europe. And he said, well, he said, let's see. We need some help down in the shipping department. So I found my way down the shipping department. And Dave Johnson, who had met the navigators over there in Europe but through one of the servicemen centers, was in charge of the shipping department. And Gene Lawley, who had been in the Army over there and involved, was kind of an assistant. And then Stevan Tavigian was there, who eventually became Billy Graham's son-in-law. They were all down there, and so I go in, and I was really crushed. I thought, good night, here, a servicemen center director, and now I'm folding up bee rations and stapling them and shipping them out. They used to call them bee ration parties. And there wasn't a party at all. Well, and you know, as I was reflecting tonight, there's some things that the Lord taught me here. And one of the things that the Lord began to bring out in my life was, I think, Howie Hendricks calls it the spiritual leukemia. And it's nothing more than pride. And, you know, my pride, I was really hurt, and my ego and everything, shipping department. But I didn't realize it until I got some feedback. I forget how this came, but Stevan Tavigian, who was just here for a brief time, he was the one that spotted this, that I had such a negative attitude. And he mentioned it to somebody, perhaps it was Chuck Farrow, who was in charge of the personnel at that time, training program. And anyhow, it got back to me, and that really got me thinking. You know, was I really that way? And I remember some crises experiences over this here at the Glen. And some long times of prayer, claiming promises, shedding tears, and beginning to work this out of my life. It didn't all get out of my life back then, but the Lord really started working on it. And eventually, the Lord had a little mercy, and I was asked to be in charge of the servicemen's department, and that helped, and still working for Jim Downing. And That was a privilege. And then working with Jim and Bob here, we were out visiting people and sharing on financial needs. And then from here, I went over to Naples, Italy. But a very outstanding and very important event did take place here at the Glen, and that was that I met my sweetheart. And Nancy came here. She was the first time when I met her. She was a conferee. And then I was out in Hawaii for a year and came back, and we were married. So I realized that Philippians 2:13, for it is God which worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. And that I came here thinking that, man, I was hot shot, but that God had a training program for me and that he started working out in my life. And I know a lot of you are going through it, but as I reflect, well, these are that 2.5, 3 years here at the Glen were just, you know, outstanding because God could begin to work on my character and in new ways that I had not anticipated or expected. And I really thank him for it.